Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church and America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Let's see here. We have another email from this listener. I don't know what state he's from. Peter Sterling. And Peter disagrees with what we said about Disney's new Pixar movie Cars because of how vulgar it is in its language and jokes. And he wrote, "And now Bob won't go to the new Pixar movie because of the language," he posted. That's on our website at kgov.com. "What a wimpy, wimpy excuse for a Christian." So that's what Peter writes to us. And so one of our KGov staffers, we got the best staffers here. One of our KGov staffers, kgov.com, wrote back, "Peter, yes, while today so many kids in America grow up to be crude, we remember the time when kids grew up to be far more gracious and polite, and come to think of it, happier and better able to interact with adults. In fact, as we travel abroad, we still meet young kids like that, where our pop culture hasn't made them more vulgar." But then, Peter, apparently you disapprove of that kind of concern for children. Thanks for writing, a KGov staffer. That's why our KGov staffers get all the big bucks, because they're good. All right, and IBM has now come up with, along with other researchers, a new technology for a new computer chip, which, you know, computer chips are fast now. They run 2-3 gigahertz, and some thought they were reaching the upper limits of how fast a computer chip can operate. Well, it turns out that now they've come up with a technology to make the chips operate 250 times faster than chips commonly used today. Now that's under, so what they do, they take the chips and they freeze them down to near absolute zero using liquid helium. And then when they allow them to warm back up to room temperature, they operate rather than 2 or 3 gigahertz. A gigahertz, that's how many cycles per second, giga for billion. That's like 2 billion cycles per second. Now they've got this thing, it'll operate at the cold temperature at 500 billion cycles per second, at room temperature at 350 gig. Just extraordinary. So that's exciting. And in, well, this is too much. Back east in Maryland, we have a Republican governor who supports tolerance, and his name is Governor Robert Ehrlich, and he just fired a Christian who was on what they call the Metro Board because the Christian mentioned his church's beliefs that homosexuality was a sin, that it's immoral. And so here we have the tolerant governor firing, being rather intolerant against the Christian who says, well, we believe that homosexuality is a sin. And so that's what's happening in our culture. While the liberals are preaching tolerance, they're making our culture increasingly intolerant toward Christians. Rather discouraging. But now I want to talk about marriage laws right here in Colorado. While we have people listening to Bob Enyart Live in cities around the country, we've got an affiliate outside of Des Moines, Iowa. But let's talk about college marriage law for a moment, because our Colorado legislature has put on the November ballot a bill for domestic partnerships that would basically legalize homosexual unions in Colorado. It wouldn't use the word marriage, but it gives homosexual couples all the benefits of marriage. And so now there are conservative and Christian initiatives to oppose that. So to talk us through this, I'd like to go to Berthoud, Colorado, Colorado Representative Kevin Lundberg. Kevin, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Well, thank you very much, Bob. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. It's been a long time since we've talked. Kevin, could you help us understand, a while back we had Sean Mitchell on this program, senator from Broomfield, Colorado, and he had an initiative that we weren't too excited about, and It had to do with reciprocal benefits, and so that died, and we're thankful it died. And now, first, could you describe to us what would happen in Colorado law if this domestic partnerships becomes law in November?
Actually, if you'll allow me to back up just a little bit and
sure.
put it in context, of course, 19 other states have already dealt with the definition of marriage, and overwhelmingly, by an average of over 70%, they vote for the principle that marriage is between a man and a woman. Here in Colorado, there's a group called Coloradoans for Marriage, which have been working on a marriage amendment that says just that, marriage is between one man and one woman. The legislature, I should say the radical left elements of the legislature, which unfortunately is the majority right now,
mm-hmm.
Therefore set about to put in place a question, to put on the ballot a question of creating what they're calling domestic partnerships. And by a simple majority vote in both houses, they could do that, which they did. And serving in the Colorado House, I watched this process, and I realized we really had a cultural train wreck headed down the road.
Yeah.
Because we will most probably, if Coloradans for Marriage are successful, and I trust they will be, we will have on the ballot the question of defining marriage as between a man and a woman. But because it's silent on the subject of civil unions or anything that doesn't have the word marriage attached to it, it's free game to change everything else. And so this measure that the legislature has put on the ballot, creating domestic or putting the question to the people of creating domestic mm-hmm. partnerships, can very easily pass at the same time. And here's the way they're spinning it. They're saying, well, you know, that marriage amendment, that's kind of a really hard right opinion. Imagine that, marriage between one man and one woman.
Being an extremist opinion, right?
Yeah.
That's the way they spin it. Right?
They spin it, right, and they say, but our domestic partnerships is just a reasonable compromise.
Mm.
It just allows some rights and privileges for these homosexual couples. Now, what they don't tell you is that domestic partnerships is, in fact, as you just said, everything Colorado law addresses in marriage, except the word marriage,
right.
is put in domestic partnerships.
For example, if a homosexual couple registers as a domestic partnership under this House Bill 06-1344, then they have the legal right to adopt children. If one partner has a child, it becomes the legal child of the other partner also.
Mm-hmm.
They get their marriage licenses just the same way a man and a woman applies and gets a marriage license. And divorce and separation are treated the same as marriage. So it really is full-blown marriage, just without the word marriage.
Absolutely. Now, I'll certainly grant that when you use the word marriage, you also flip some federal rules.
Hmm.
But that kind of cuts both ways. You know, right now in federal tax law, there's the marriage penalty. So if you're married and you both have both husband and wife have an income, they pay more taxes.
Mm.
Well, that won't apply here,
mm.
nor will other federal rules. But mm. as far as Colorado law is concerned, everything they can call marriage is marriage.
In fact, they also say that include it in any legal definition of the term spouse or family will be. They will require that includes domestic partners.
Yes, yes, it is so clear, and mm. and it's kind of an Orwellian doublespeak in those ways, because it very clearly says now a spouse is for a married couple, but then it goes on to say, as you say, spouse and domestic partnership are identical in Colorado law.
Exactly.
So they say it isn't this, but it really is this.
Okay, so now let me summarize what you said so far. 19 other states have passed laws saying marriage is only between one man and one woman. And,
yes, these are essentially constitutional issues. Too.
Okay, and when that has gone to a vote, it's been about 70% of the people voting for those laws, which is a huge landslide. And
right.
you know what? Even regardless of the percentage of people who support that, though, it's right. Even if somewhere in some countries in Europe, if a majority think it's good to have homosexual marriage, in that case, the majority would be wrong, because if you love your neighbor, you're going to warn them of things that are destructive, and the homosexual lifestyle is harmful to the people who engage in it. And so that's why efforts like this, not because there's a hatred of homosexuals, but the opposite, because we love our neighbor and we want to let them know God made us male and female, and he made marriage between one man and one woman, and this is destructive to the people who get involved in it.
Absolutely. It is fundamental that we defend and maintain the definition of marriage in our culture. That's the most important institution God established. Really, government, in God's eyes, as you look how Scripture
is
puts
secondary.
Things together.
Yeah.
Marriage is so important. The family is the core element of culture, and we're tearing that apart with this. Mm. And you're quite right as well. Regardless of whether 70% or 7% think it's right, it's still right. The reason I say that is I want to point out how shrewd, frankly, this political move is to, at the same time that we're defining marriage, to put a domestic partnership bill on the table, because people will not overwhelmingly vote against that unless they know what it is.
Mm.
When they first rolled it out, I remember I attended the press conference that House and Senate sponsors had when they first announced domestic partnerships, and they said, this has nothing to do with marriage. This is not marriage. There's nothing to do with marriage.
Yeah, it's just a lie. It's deceptive.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. And if they get away with it, we will have effectively changed the meaning of marriage and the family in Colorado in a big way. And I, frankly, when I saw this coming together, could not sit by idly and watch it happen without being as proactive as I can in saying, no, we must draw the line. We must underscore in our Constitution that marriage, whatever you call it, by any name, shall be between one man and one woman, period.
And we're talking to Representative Kevin Lundberg. That's Lundberg. And his website is protectingcoloradochildren.org. And that's just because we're in Colorado, protectingcoloradochildren.org. And so, Kevin, state after state, they're saying they're passing constitutional amendments saying marriage is only between one man and one woman. The Colorado legislature, House and Senate, which is turned extremely liberal in recent years, has this now ballot initiative for November that if people vote for it, basically, homosexual couples will have marriage just without the name marriage. And now there's an effort to an alternative to that. But it's a little bit confusing because there are two different initiatives. The one you've mentioned is really not going to get the job done. It states that marriage is between a man and a woman. And fine, that's good, and that's necessary. That's Coloradoans for Marriage and their initiative. But this domestic partnership bill is designed to work perfectly with that. They don't care in this bill. They say, we're not talking about marriage. We're talking about domestic partnerships.
Right, right. And that, as you say, that it is very important to state clearly, marriage is between one man and one woman. But if we are to really deal with this issue that we will face in November, we need to have the full spectrum on there. And honestly, I'm doing this for two reasons. One is, without it, we just can't get the argument out there in a thorough enough manner. You say it's confusing. Well, the confusion is what the domestic partnership issue is throwing up is this fog of something that says it isn't marriage but really is. And as I say, the only alternative I could see was to put a Second Amendment on the ballot, and that's what we're working at doing right now. It's a citizen's initiative. I don't have any guarantee that it's going to be there. Lord willing, it will.
At Denver Bible Church this weekend, we had some of our folks asking others to sign petitions to get this initiative on the ballot in November. This is crucial. The other initiative by Coloradans for Marriage, that's wonderful. Marriage is between one man and one woman. But this is really the initiative that we need. in order to help our neighbor to protect people from the belief that the homosexual lifestyle is healthy and equal to a heterosexual union of a man and a woman. So what is this initiative called? The one that you are working with Will Perkins. We're very familiar with Will Perkins, a Christian activist for many years. What's your initiative called?
Well, we still struggle with titles because only after you qualify for the ballot do they assign it a specific number that you'll see on the ballot. They call it Amendment Proposal Number 109, but I wouldn't go down that road too far because that'll be really confusing.
Yeah.
This is marriage is between one man and one woman with no exceptions.
Okay.
The actual language says no legal status that is similar to marriage will be created nor recognized in Colorado law. That's what the best legal minds that I could find said would be the most efficient and effective. And
I have the text of the initiative right here in front of me, and it's so straightforward, it's so simple. Neither the state of Colorado nor any of its political subdivisions may create or recognize a legal status similar to that of marriage. And that's about it.
Yeah, that's we wanted it to be as straightforward as possible. We also wanted to make sure that we were nowhere near violating the single subject rule. You know, you can't have two subjects in one amendment. And so that is one point for, because down in Georgia, for example, a judge actually threw out their marriage amendment because it dealt with both the meaning of marriage and the exclusion of any other marriage lookalike.
And here the Colorado Supreme Court has upheld your wording. And people behind the domestic partnership effort, they took this to court. And so
have challenged us at every step of the road. This, this was actually the third time. They challenged us at the title board. They challenged it at the title board again. And then they took it to the Supreme Court. In each case, they've been completely beat back on it because they really don't have a legal leg to stand on there. This needs to go forward. The people of Colorado need to have the opportunity to do this. But I must tell you that we have a very high hill to climb right now because we need to collect just under 68,000 valid signatures. And that means you have to collect about 100,000 to make sure you have enough that will qualify. And we have until August 7th to get them back to the Secretary of State. Only a few weeks. A very tight timeline. I dove into this really at the last minute because I saw no one else doing it. And as a consequence, we've got a lot to do in a short amount of time.
Kevin, if someone would like to help carry a petition, get signatures, is their first stop your website, protectingcoloradochildren.org?
Yes, that's the best place to start. It's simply protectingcoloradochildren.org. Or we do have an 800 number as well if somebody doesn't have internet access.
Okay.
Let me give that to you as well if I could.
Please do.
Okay, that's 1-800-944-1027. 1-800-944-1027. Either direction, we have a team standing by to send out petitions and some instructions with them, and anything we can do to help move this along where we need to, because it will take several thousand people carrying petitions across the state. We have several hundred doing it right now. We've distributed almost 2,000 petitions. Some people have multiples, of course, but I'd say we're maybe a third of the way there as far as getting them out on the street. Then the big job is to get them filled up and then to get them back and get them to the Secretary of State.
All right. And if someone goes to your website, it's so easy. Beautiful website, by the way. And right at the top, children need a mom and a dad. And, of course, there are families where mom or dad dies or there's the tragedy of divorce. But you don't want systematically, you don't want systematically to bring tens of thousands of kids into families where there's not a mom and a dad, as though you're doing that by choice because it's preferred or something.
Absolutely.
Kids need a mom and a dad, and we live in a world where you say that today and they call you hate-filled if you say that children need a mom and a dad. That's how far we've gone. But then on that homepage at the bottom, will you join us in this effort? And you click on there and it asks, you know, if you'd like to carry a petition, you must be 18 years old and a citizen of Colorado. And then you just put in your name and address and your information. And then you could help by carrying a petition. You could be a coordinator for your church. You can help with a financial gift. And that those are all the things that are needed for protecting Colorado children.
Right, right. We're doing what we can, and it's the people of Colorado stepping up to the plate, but it's going to take a lot more to really make it happen. And I appreciate you giving me a few minutes here to explain it a bit, and maybe I can keep in touch with you on this.
Sure thing. And we're just about done here with Representative Kevin Lundberg. Kevin, we would like to follow up on this. And then also, hey, could I give a suggestion for your webmaster?
You bet.
Where it says that people could send a check.
Mm-hmm.
You know, PayPal, I think they have about 70 million accounts out there right now, and people so easily send money via PayPal.
Well, you're quite correct, and as a matter of fact, I'm just a little bit of ahead of you. If you refresh the screen, I just updated it as you were speaking. So now you can click through and you can actually do that.
I can't even believe that. It says there right now, or click here to donate now online.
Yeah. Well, I was just ready to make that change, so I couldn't help but now we did it on air and online.
Well, you know what? That's just hysterical, Kevin, because you did that, I just clicked on that and typed in an amount, and I'm sending off money right now.
Fantastic.
So it makes it a lot easier.
I appreciate that, and that's important. But the most important thing is that people get behind it, sign the petitions, carry the petitions, so that we, the people of Colorado, can stand up and say marriage is between one man and one woman, no exceptions. That's where we're going to stay here in this state.
All right. Thank you so much, Representative Lundberg.
Thank you, Bob.
All right. Appreciate it. And we'll get back in touch with you on this. Okay. That was great. All right. Now, we only have a few minutes left. But yesterday I mentioned a column this past week by Nat Hentoff, expert on free speech. And he's a liberal guy, but he is totally pro-life, which we're very thankful for. And there was so much interest that generated in just the little comment I made about his column that I thought I'd get into it a little bit more. He writes, Nat Hentoff, the Village Voice syndicated columnist, and I got this copy out of the Washington Times. He writes, a friend of mine told me of a recent conversation at his family's dinner table that keeps reverberating in my mind. His wife, his friend's wife, a physician, also performs abortions. And their 9-year-old son, hearing the words and curious about its meaning, looked up from his plate and asked, "What is an abortion?" His mother tried carefully to describe it in simple terms. "But," said her son, "that means killing the baby." The mother then explained that there are certain months during which an abortion cannot be performed. Now, of course, that's not true in Colorado and elsewhere, but in some states. "With very few exceptions," she told her son. The 9-year-old boy shook his head. "But," he said, "it doesn't matter what month, it still means killing the babies." Wow. Hearing the story, I wished it could be repeated to the justices of the Supreme Court. And isn't that true? And what a powerful story to be made public. And we pray that in families, abortion families, that the kids might be used to bring common sense and morality and confront their parents. So here is this woman, this abortionist son, saying to his mom, who performs abortions, "That's killing the baby." And how true. And then Nat Hentoff goes on in this column to talk about Jesse Jackson. And he said Jesse Jackson is one of the people who convinced Nat Hentoff to become pro-life. And he quotes from a speech Jesse Jackson gave years ago. And he said that there are those who argue that the right to privacy is of a higher order than the right to life. And Jesse Jackson said way back then, he said, that was the premise of slavery. You could not protest the existence or treatment of slaves on the plantation because that was private and therefore out of your right to be concerned. And then Jesse Jackson continued, don't let the pro-choicers convince you that a fetus isn't a human being. That's how the whites dehumanized us blacks. The first step was to distort the image of us as human beings in order to justify what they wanted to do and not even feel they'd done anything wrong. And then Nat Hentoff writes, that preacher was the Reverend Jesse Jackson. Later he decided to run for the presidency, and I'll add, as a Democrat, and that's why he changed his position. And then Nat Hentoff goes on to say that in the euthanasia movement in America, he met a Derek Humphrey, who was the founder of the Hemlock Society. And Derek Humphrey said to Nat Hentoff, he said, you know, in this country, it was hard to get anyone to support euthanasia, but then something wonderful happened. It opened all the doors for me. And Nat Hentoff said, what was that wonderful thing? And Derek Humphrey, the founder of the Hemlock Society, the suicide group, he said, Roe v. Wade. So what a great column by Nat Hentoff, who I want to warn you, though, he's a liberal, but even a broken clock is right twice a day. And quite often there are people who are liberals who will acknowledge that it's wrong to kill an innocent human being. I know that's asking a lot of a liberal these days, but there are still some of them out there. And so I'm thankful for this column. You're listening to Bob and Yurt Live, our website, kgov.com, and we will be right back.
At Bob and Yurt Live and kgov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-NYARD. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or kgov.com.
This is Bob and Yurt inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278. Bob and Yurt Live. Bob and Yurt Live, the website, KGOV, KGOV.com, KGOV.com. The United States military, thankfully, has made a change in our ground-based interceptor missile defense system, our missile defense shield. It was in test mode, and now in the last couple of weeks, they've changed it to operational mode. And that's great, since North Korea is expected to launch a missile. They've apparently fueled the missile that they have on a launch pad with liquid fuel, and it can't stay in that state very long. So if North Korea launches it, my hope is we would use that as a test case and try to shoot it down. That would be excellent. That would be a really good test. It's pretty intense. An anti-missile system, it is difficult. When somebody shoots a missile at us, and we've tested this, what, now a dozen times, our system, and we shoot up a missile to try to shoot that missile down, we don't shoot up a missile, and then when we get close to the missile explode like a warhead or something. We don't do that for reasons we decided we can't do that. What you try to do is you shoot up a missile and you try to actually hit the missile coming at you with the missile that you shot up. And these things are going incredibly fast. And it's similar to trying to hit a bullet with a bullet. Somebody shoots a bullet, and then you try to shoot that bullet out of the air. That's tough. And it's been compared to that kind of difficulty. So the fact that we took our missile defense system and made it operational in the last couple of weeks, that's exciting. I'm thrilled we've been doing that. And like we said on yesterday's show, liberals are against a missile defense system. And they say, another country could put a nuke on a boat and float it in here. And, of course, that's true, too. That's true. But a government has to prepare to defend against all kinds of reasonable threats. And it's like if you had a house in a floodplain. If you have a home in a floodplain, does that mean you don't need a smoke detector? No, it doesn't mean that. You need to worry about water and fire. And so ballistic missiles are something that it'd be great to be able to defend against. And liberals, they prefer the old MAD. Now, young people today don't even know what MAD is anymore. Mutually Assured Destruction, MAD. And that was the deal with the Soviet Union and their missiles and our missiles. And the deterrent was that if you attacked either side, they had enough missiles that would survive the first attack that they could destroy you. So it was Mutually Assured Destruction, which would restrain the Soviets from attacking us. And so to move from MAD to a defense-based system where nations could defend themselves from aggressors with ballistic missiles, that seems like a good idea. But liberals, with their tendency to prefer end-of-the-world scenarios and death and destruction, they don't like the idea of America being able to defend ourselves. They don't like that idea generally. So we have to trick the liberals into supporting missile defense. And we could do that by saying, well, really, if a nuclear warhead, incoming nuclear warhead, exploded somewhere in America, think of what it would do to the endangered species in that region. So we need to sell the missile shield to liberals as necessary to save animals and the environment and clean air and EPA standards and all that. Okay. And also, of course, targeted by these incoming missiles are areas that are heavily populated with homosexuals. We should tell the liberals that too, like Miami or New York or San Francisco or Los Angeles or Houston. Those are the kinds of targets that our enemies would choose. And so and maybe they don't care about homosexuals, but if they did, of course, they should support a missile shield. You need a lot more than that to protect society against homosexuality, but at least we could trick the liberals into paying for a missile shield. Okay. By the way, for our friends in Iowa, someone just ordered one of our videos. Which video is going out to Iowa? Oh, live from Las Vegas. Live from Las Vegas, it's Bob Enyart. That's a fun video. On the convention center floor, I got to debate a never-ending parade of folks in Las Vegas on a dozen different topics. And we had $100 bills taped to the microphones. And if anybody beat me in the debate, they got $100. It was a lot of fun. You'll have to check out that video live from Las Vegas. All right. Now in the news from Reuters, the Church of the Episcopal Church in America. So it's the U.S. Episcopal Church. Now that's affiliated with the Anglican Church, the Church of England around the world. And in America, they have about almost 2.5 million members, 2.3 million members, and they just elected a new leader. And that's a bit of a problem right there. In the Bible, God doesn't tell us that the church should be run like a democracy. And of all the major denominations, one of the strongest and the best, I think, for standing firm is the Southern Baptist, although they have their problems, right? We have our problems here at Bob and Your Life. Everybody's got their problems. Paul pointed out, the Apostle Paul, we haven't arrived yet. We have not been delivered from our flesh. That'll happen when we go to see the Lord. So we all have problems as Christians. But the Southern Baptist, while they're one of the strongest Christian denominations for holding true to God's word, of course they compromise in terrible ways, like defending godless education for their kids. That's one example of a terrible way. But something else they do that the Episcopalians do is that they vote on these issues. They vote. They vote for their leaders, and they vote on homosexuality, on abortion, on whatever. And in the Bible, God put his law, the Ten Commandments, he wrote that in stone, and he did that for a reason, so we could get it through our heads that it's not a democratic process. There's no amendment process. And so it's not up to human beings to change the laws. And voting, when a large organization, they get together and they say, okay, we're going to vote on homosexuality. And they're conservative Christians, so they vote, maybe 92% vote that homosexuality is a sin. Maybe 98% vote that a homosexual should not be a pastor. Maybe 99% vote that homosexuals should not be married in the church. Well, it was a huge mistake to do that, to start voting. Big mistake. Because eventually, the vote, the results will become worse and worse. And eventually, just like the Episcopal Church, eventually, if the Lord tarries, the Baptist will start to vote increasingly in favor of homosexuality. Why? Because that's the way of the world. Jesus said you can't put new wine into old wineskins. And the wine is basically the gospel. And the wineskins, well, that's the infrastructure we use to share the gospel with others. So you build organizations, you build Christian schools, and eventually they are godless. You build Christian universities, hospitals. The Christian hospitals eventually are doing abortions and sex change operations. And the denominations eventually become worldly, and they are in rebellion against Jesus Christ and God's word. So that's what happened. So the Episcopalians voted for a new leader. It's Bishop Catherine Jeffords Scorey. That's her name, Catherine Jeffords Scorey. She left out the hyphen. It's not hyphenated. But Bishop Catherine Jeffords Scorey, and she was elected, right? So she's the duly elected leader of the U.S. Episcopal Church. And she was interviewed on CNN, and she said that homosexuality is not a sin, and that homosexuals were created by God to be homosexuals. And she said, in fact, that God creates us with different gifts. Now, I don't know what she would say about pedophiles. Pedophilia, is that a sin? Bestiality with animals, is that a sin? Incest, is that a sin or is it a gift? A little gift for somebody. So perversion is not a gift, it's a sin. It's filthy, it's wrong. But when democratic concepts, democracy is humanist, it's humanism. And don't pride yourself on supporting a republic instead of a democracy, because representative republics are also humanist. It's humanist. A representative republic is very similar to a democracy. They're kissing cousins. What is the difference? And the reason I'm talking about this is because Christians get easily seduced by humanist ideas. And we're not sufficiently educated in God's word to realize when we've been duped. So democracy, an increasing number of Christians today realize that democracy is bad, that it's evil. Now, I don't know about most Christians, but many, a growing percentage. But so many, most of the ones who know that democracy is bad, they think a republic is good. And where'd they get that from? 3 Romans chapter 9? Where'd they get that from? Well, it turns out that the majority is evil, and a form of government that gives authority to the people, to the majority, is a destructive form of government that certainly God never authorized. So Christians say, well, we know democracy is evil. Jesus said the majority are going to hell. They don't love God. And so majority rules, the majority will legalize all the wicked things they want to do, like stealing and murder and adultery. They'll legalize all that. And so that's what's happened in America, in all of European democracies and Western democracies. They legalize all these things. So democracy is a bad idea. Oh, but I don't support democracy. I'm an Episcopalian. No, whatever. I support a republic. What is a republic? Well, a representative republic is where the people, they don't vote on the laws directly. They vote for representatives, and the representatives vote for the laws. Oh, I see. That's a big difference. That's a huge difference. Boy, that is the biggest difference I've ever heard of in my life. So in a representative republic, if the people want to legalize abortion, they can't vote on a law that says legalize abortion. They have to vote for representatives. Like, let's say, who? Let's say Giuliani, right? Former mayor of New York City, Rudy Giuliani. And they vote for him. And since he's pro-abortion, he will do what he can as a governing official to make sure abortion is legal. That's a representative republic. The people want pornography to be legal and fornication to be legal and adultery to be legal. So, well, we support a representative republic where the people don't vote on the law directly. That would be democracy. That's evil. So we'll vote for Hillary Clinton and Rudy Giuliani, and we'll let them do our dirty work for us. So the people will elect representatives who will get the job done. So democracies and republics are kissing cousins. They're very similar. Those who've taught you that democracies are bad but republics are good, they're Christian spin doctors. They're just trying to get, they're trying to defend our form of government, not putting it through a rigorous test on is it biblical, but just trying to defend it, like Christians have done throughout the centuries. Back in England with their common law, and their Christians who would say, or Christians are not, at least they quote from the Bible, and they say the laws in England are good and we should defend them. Why are they good? They were all humanist. Well, they're good and we should defend them because there are laws, and that's what men in every age, they tend to look for excuses why we're going to defend slavery being legal. Well, it's in the Constitution. Constitution, Article 1, right? Slavery. You count blacks as 3/5 of a person, as a general rule. Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution. So the whole idea of democracy, this humanist idea that people are going to vote, they're going to vote on their leaders, and they're going to vote on their laws. That's all humanism. It's an insult against God. Authority flows downhill, not uphill. And God gave us the law carved in stone so we would get it through our heads that it's not up to us to decide right and wrong. But anyway, the new leader now of the Episcopal Church, Bishop Catherine, she said on CNN that God creates us with different gifts. And I don't know what she would say about pedophilia or incest or bestiality. Maybe she would think they're gifts also. I don't know. Can't speak for her. But when you no longer trust God's word, then where is it? When you start to compromise on moral issues, where is it logical to stop compromising? Nowhere, really. You just go as far as your mind will allow you to go. So she was asked, this Bishop Catherine, head of the Episcopal Church in America, she was asked, well, doesn't the Bible say that homosexuality is a sin? And she said, well, that was written in a very different historical context by people asking different questions. Different questions? We're asking the same question. Should two men lie together as a man and a woman does? Same thing in the Bible, same thing today. What, people have evolved now? We're cucumbers or what? We're still people, and we still steal and murder and commit adultery and fornication and homosexuality. And these things were condemned. And she says, well, I go with the Jesus kind of Bible. You know, I'm now putting it in my own words, but she says, I go with the Jesus story. You know, how nice and how gentle and tender and inclusive he was. That's the thing. It's all inclusive. The great message of Jesus. How to include everyone. So I was thinking about that, and I looked up a little bit of what Jesus said. Like in Matthew 24, Jesus promised his followers, he said, you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake, and then many will be offended. Jesus said that. Now, does that sound like he's saying, hey, this is an inclusive message I have? He didn't say inclusive. He said most people are going to hell. Very few are headed to heaven. And he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. That doesn't sound inclusive. You know how the Bible teaches that Jesus is the rock? And in Matthew 21:44, also in Luke 20, Jesus said that on whom that rock falls, it will grind him to powder. Now, there's a verse probably not quoted by the Episcopal Church very often, Jesus saying that when the rock falls on you, it will grind you to powder. Either you come to God and humbly repent, or God will be your undoing. Remember that Jesus warned in Matthew 24:49, he warned him who drinks with the drunkards that God would, quote, cut him in two. It's pretty harsh. Oh, yeah, and send him to hell. That's pretty harsh. Jesus says that on whom the rock falls, it will grind him to powder, and God will cut you in two. In a parable, Jesus described his own intolerance in Luke 19 and verse 27. He said, bring here those enemies of mine who did not obey me, and slay them before me. That's a strong one. Jesus said, bring here those enemies of mine who would not obey me and slay them before me. Luke 19:27. Wow. So I wonder if Bishop Catherine, if she quotes from such passages when she's teaching people about Christ and his teachings. Probably not, right? Probably not. And it's really sad. It's tragic. So, regarding the whole issue of humanism and democracy, please don't let yourself be tricked into thinking that democracy and representative republics are somehow God's will for mankind. The Bible doesn't teach that we should have representatives running the government. In fact, quite the opposite. Remember in Numbers, the rebellion? There were the representatives of the people. In fact, there were 250 of them. Do you remember that story? I remember that. And there was Moses' cousin, Korah. It's called the Rebellion of Korah. And so there was Korah. Let's see. I wonder if I could find that. There's Korah, and then there's the representatives of the people. And what happened was God told Korah and his guys, he said, okay, I want Moses and Aaron to stand over here, and Korah, you stand over there. So they separate. Well, and God brings down fire from heaven, destroys Korah, and then he's got the representatives of the people. This is in Numbers chapter 16. And he has them stand off. Don't stand near Moses, stand over there. And they stand over there, and Moses over here, and Aaron. And said, no, back up a little further. Let me back up a little further. No, back up a little more. Back up a little more. And then God opens up the earth and sucks them down alive into hell. And who were these people that rose up with some of the children of Israel? 250 leaders of the congregation, representatives of the people. Representatives. Numbers chapter 16, verse 2. They were, that was their House of Representatives. And today, I think there was a comedy, some movie, Mars Attacks or something. I saw it on an airplane flying to Hawaii one day. Mars Attacks. And in the movie, it's a comedy, I guess. And at one scene in the movie, the aliens, the Martians, attacked Congress, and they blew up Congress in Washington, D.C. And the people in the movie started cheering. Everybody was cheering that Congress was blown up. And it was funny. People on the plane laughed. And why did they laugh? Because people sort of wouldn't mind too much. I mean, it'd be an attack on our sovereignty by aliens. But other than that, and maybe Eve, the caller from Denver yesterday, maybe Eve would be upset. Was she abducted by aliens during the show? Oh, somebody said she was carried away by a man in a flying suit. Oh, I thought she had been abducted by aliens. Well, anyway, people sort of wouldn't mind too much, like demonstrated in that movie. It's a joke. And the idea of the representatives of the people making the laws, well, if they truly are representatives of the people, they will do what is evil because that's the desire of the people. Our form of government will only work if the majority is righteous. Well, that should have been a hint to our founding fathers that our form of government will not work. And in lickety-split time, via the Constitution, our government has legalized stealing and murder and adultery. That's what we've done. And we have our Christian leaders now who say, well, judges should uphold partial birth abortion if they're good judges, because that's the law, and we are legal positivists, because we've all been influenced by humanism, democracy, and republicanism. Hey, there's a lot to learn, but don't worry, there's a lot of time. We have an eternity ahead of us. Hey, we are out of time here at Bob and Your Live. God bless you. Check out our website, kgov.com.